Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion, or illusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the station or the management that you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, it looks like it's going to be your views as well, because right now our regularly scheduled guest is not available. So if you're out there in the listening audience and you have something you'd like to talk about, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I'm going to ask my producer if he'll call my wife and ask her to bring out my little silver computer, and it may have a cell phone or some other means by which we can reach our regularly scheduled guest. Under many circumstances, you have to understand the background of banking to understand what's going on today. And traditionally, down through the years, the way the banks have played the game, and it is a game, is they expand the money supply, and they do this by simply creating money out of nothing. They create credit, and then, of course, money is readily available. You can borrow money, and you can invest that money, and you can make a great deal of money. And so then you want, of course, borrow more money and invest it and make even more money. And this goes on and on, and pretty soon everybody is borrowing money and investing it. And then, of course, the banks turn. And, of course, they contract the money supply. They raise the interest rates. You can't borrow any money, and you've got all of this debt overhanging you. And then, of course, why you eventually default on your debt. And the banks take your home, they take your business, they take your farm. That's the way the game has been played repeatedly. There's a book called The New Freedom. It's written by Woodrow Wilson. And if you go back and you actually read what Woodrow Wilson said, why, he talked about how this was going on 95 years ago, and how there are these forces out there that were certainly manipulating the people and taking advantage of them, and nothing has really changed that since that time. Unfortunately, most people do not understand that what we are seeing today is a replay of what's happened so many times throughout a past century. So what we do is, of course, hope that people will actually look and see what's going on, and the game is played over and over again, and each time, of course, we lose. And this is exactly what they're doing now, but they're doing it a little bit differently than they've done before. And Sydney, right now, of course, you look at the Fed funds rate. Why, it's down to zero, and that isn't that wonderful? They must be really trying to stimulate the economy, but the truth of the matter is, they're not trying to stimulate it at all, because what they have done is, by paying interest on the reserves that the small banks deposited with the Fed, and they have to have a certain amount of their money deposited with the Fed so that they can loan on a 10-to-1 schedule. But by paying interest for the first time in history, the Federal Reserve has dried up literally all the money that was out there to be lent. And then, of course, as far as the large banks are concerned, they're in on the scam. And they are simply withholding funds at the present time, and they've jacked the price up. So if you are a major corporation, you want to borrow $100 million or $500 million, you're going to be paying 10 or 15% interest or more to borrow the money. And, of course, most companies can't survive with that sort of an interest rate. So this is like deja vu all over again. They've dried up the money, the small banks, and the big banks are in on the scam. And people are going to lose their businesses, they're going to lose their homes, their farms, and their factories, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm describing the banking scam as it's been played out over and over again. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we will welcome your calls here because we have absolutely nothing prepared. We assumed we were going to have a fascinating guest this evening, and he, so far at least, has not shown up. So we're going to have to look for the other alternatives. Under any circumstances, what we are basically seeing is an organized effort to destroy the economy of our country. It's not happening by accident. The people in charge know exactly what they're doing, but they don't want the American people to know what they're doing. And the great tragedy is that people are losing their homes, they are losing their jobs, and this is all part of a planned effort to destroy our economy. Now, why would anybody in their right mind want to destroy the American economy? And the answer is really very simple. We're not dealing with people in their right mind. We're dealing with people who have a different worldview. And these people, of course, the people who run our government, are tied into the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers. There's only about, less than 5,000 of them here in North America. And their goal is, of course, to destroy not only the American economy, but the economy of the entire world. And out of the chaos that will ensue, because chaos is developing all over Europe, somebody just brought me a copy of The Guardian published over in England, and there are riots all over Europe. You're not hearing too much about them here, but they really are taking place. And, of course, France is almost ungovernable at the present time. Out of many of the countries of Europe, out of the chaos that is going to develop and is developing at the present time, of course, is going to come the call for a new economic order, a new world order. In fact, that is exactly what Henry Kissinger talks about in his January 12th article, which was published in the International Herald Tribune, where Henry Kissinger actually called for, the title of his article is A Chance for a New World Order. And ladies and gentlemen, these things are taking place today, not by accident. The people in charge are brilliant. In fact, they have to be brilliant to be able to confuse the issues as effectively as they are, to give everybody the impression that they're trying to solve the problem. But rather than trying to solve the problem, they're doing everything they can to make it worse. The recent so-called stimulant bill is not to stimulate. It is, of course, to destroy our economy. We'll be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and fortunately we have with us our special guest for this evening, John Quirk. Hi, good evening, John. How are you doing?
Good evening. I wish I could say the East Coast would be better, but economically the East Coast and probably the rest of the country is in not such a good economics.
Well, tell us what your take is on this. Why do you think this is happening? Do you think this is happening simply by ineptitude? Do you think it's happening because we've had going through a cycle? Or do you think this is all being done intentionally to wreck our economy, to take us into a world government?
Well, I think there's truth to everything you say. One of the really disturbing things is, and I'm working on some research now regarding the economy and national security. And, you know, people have been throwing lots of numbers around, and since I've worked in national security a long time, one of the interesting things that I've seen is that we owe, I think, according to the recent bailouts and stimulus plans, somewhere between $1 to $2 trillion. That does not count all of the interest that we're going to owe the Chinese. Goldman Sachs came out, I think, today, and they said that if the government even goes further, they're going to have to take out another $4 trillion to take over all the banks' troubled mortgage and consumer debt and interest, because there's like 1,000 banks that may go out of business. But the other thing that they're leaving out is that the Pentagon's wish list is going to probably come out sometime in late March or April. And that could be, according to my friends in the national security and intelligence community, something like $3 to $4 trillion. In other words, the Navy, the Army, the Marines, the intelligence community, the signals intelligence people, and then the Coast Guard and Homeland Security are putting in something like budget requests for 45 new weapon systems. And I'm not a forensic accountant, but if you add up the 1 or 2 trillion, the 4 trillion and the 3 trillion, you're going to be up to possibly somewhere between conservatively $8 to $10 trillion that we're going to be in debt by June. And it's probably going to be a challenge for even the Chinese to loan us that kind of money.
Well, the
and
Chinese,
certainly a lot of the people that Obama has appointed, certainly Gettner, who's part of the Council of Foreign Relations, they have this whole one-world idea that if you have a unified global financial system, and if you have a unified blocks of regions, for instance, they're all behind Mexico, Canada, and the United States becoming one entity, and they want eventually, like Europe, like the EU, and then they want another kind of entity in Asia, and then eventually, maybe in 5 to 10 years, they'll have another entity in the rest of Latin America. We'll all go into the one world philosophy. So I think what's going to happen is that the economy is going to worsen. There's going to be really global trouble all over. Australia is just starting to sink into recession. France is in bad shape. Europe is going into a 27 country recession. Even countries in the Middle East are in recession. There's recommendations that every country from Brazil to India to even Russia throw in another 200 to 300 billion for their own countries. So I think we're leading into some type of one world financial system that, you know, all I can say is to describe them, the elitists want to see happen.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, but of course, there is no way, of course, that we could possibly, you know, come up with the amount of money you're talking about. Basically, of course, I think the national budget is ordinarily about $3 trillion, and we're having to have trouble meeting that, you know, and having to borrow, you know, suddenly several $1 billion a day. Now, about $3 trillion, I think, has been the budget, and now, of course, they've thrown this $700 billion from last year into this. They put in this $800 and some odd billion for the so-called stimulus bill. That's going to give us a deficit of about $2 trillion for the year. With a $3 trillion budget and an additional $2 trillion deficit, and then of course the military comes up with all this wish list, even if it's, you know, they've been getting what, about $400 or $500 billion a year? Is that what the budget has been in the past, you know?
Well, we have 24 intelligence agencies. Some are super sophisticated now, like the National Reconnaissance Office in Chantilly, Virginia. They build these satellite photography and listening stations and space platforms. They want more money. The National Security wants to overhaul all their code breaking. CIA gets more billions because of the war on terror. The Pentagon has a tremendous wish list. If you look at the programs that the Air Force wants, new airplanes, new signals intelligence, new bases, same with the Army, same with the Marines, same with the Navy. The Navy is very jealous of the Coast Guard because the Coast Guard is operating now in 54 countries because of the war on terrorism, and they want an equal number of ships, and they're demanding more ships because the Russians are now spending more money on their submarine, their new generation of submarines. They want to spend more money to contain China because the Chinese want to push us out of the Pacific. That's their foreign policy, and build up a blue water navy. So I don't know where we're going to get all this money. It's going to be very ironic that we're asking for the Chinese for more money to not only for our own internal situation, but for our national security, for our own military, and the Chinese would be loaning us money for us to build up our military, largely in part against them. So there's going to be, I think, a tremendous crisis. And I think it was today the new CIA director, the director of Central Intelligence, or the nominee, said that expect worldwide riots, expect civil disobedience. I mean, Today alone, the Chinese estimated that they could lay off 15 to 25 million workers. And that, of course, the main worry about the Chinese government is that they would have street protests, which could possibly lead to, you know, some type of revolution. And then at the same time, our adversaries, like Russia, their foreign policy is to do everything to block and thwart us. They're building two mega bases in Cuba and Venezuela. They just squeezed us out of Kyrgyzstan, which is in Central Asia. They paid off the government $2 billion, and they want to flex their muscles, so we're going to have to spend more against them. Their intelligence services are actually stronger than they were during the Cold War. So the United States has to meet that obligation, which means a bigger intelligence community, bigger technical intelligence spying, bigger, more human intelligence spying. And then we have a whole host of problems kind of related to national security that people, you know, really don't discuss. That's the border wars that we're seeing with the drug cartels on the Mexican border. We've got this constant expanding threat of Chavez, who is giving money to every left-wing candidate in Latin America. And all of this is just going to continue to add to our budgets. And then, of course, you've got Afghanistan, which Obama personally wants to expand. He wants to expand anywhere from, I think he said, a few brigades to 25,000 to 50,000 troops. Some people are estimating it could take us 150,000 troops just to get even where we are there. So these budgets, in terms of Afghanistan, aren't even plugged into any of the bailout or the annual budgets that we're talking about.
Well, of course, the thing is that the history tells us that when nations get involved with all sorts of foreign adventures and foreign wars, that eventually why they go bankrupt and the nation is destroyed. There is no way that we can afford what you're mentioning. I have no question that all of these things are very real situations, but you know, with a shrinking economy, if we simply print money, we end up destroying our currency, which is, and there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch the currency. Do you think that people in Washington, D.C. have any idea that the greatest threat we face is not communist China or communist Russia, but the destruction of our financial system?
You know, I don't know. I think we're in a very bad period of leadership. If you look at, traditionally, our leadership in the Democrat-Republican Party, whether you're conservative Republican, whether it's the House of Representatives or the Senate, I don't think we've had such poor leadership and people that are really not up on things. You also have a lot of different blocks in Congress that you never had before. The Kennedy, Kerry, Dodd, Leahy, Biden group, if you will, have always been anti-CIA, anti-intelligence community. The other groups of people have either been so pro-Israel that they have changed the whole lobbying tactic. And then, of course, you've got outside influences like the Saudi Arabians who are lobbying everybody, I mean, the Republicans and the Democrats and Obama, to do something about Iran. I'll tell you, I was pro-Bush. I voted for him twice. I was very much in favor of the surge. I believe we're going to have democracy in Iraq. I really believe that. I believe that over the long term, it'll be proven that what we did in Iraq was the right thing because it's a stepping stone to Iran and a stepping stone to all the oil in Central Asia. And it's also a place that we need bases to stabilize the region, especially if Saudi Arabia and Israel, our allies, are threatened. I am completely against going into an expanding Afghanistan. And while there's arguments for it, and President Obama is for it, I think it could go down in history for two things. It could be his Vietnam, and it could really drain us to the point of trillions more than what we're talking about.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, John. I certainly agree with you. I think that Afghanistan, there's no way we could ever win this war. In fact, I'm not even sure why we are fighting there at the present time.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
Massive government deficits and our economy rebounded. Today we have massive government deficits. We are totally dependent upon other countries to fund our debt. And the only alternative to that is to simply print money, monetize our debt, and destroy the value of our currency. So John certainly shares my concern for that. If you are doing any research at all, John, on what's going on in the economy, let me suggest my November and December 2008 newsletters up on our website, radioliberty.com, and we will give you an entirely different outlook on the economy and how we got into where we are and what is really happening. And they've got a rather different outlook of people Fortunately, we do have a few researchers that send us material, and we've tried to put it into some sort of an understandable context, and I'd be very interested in seeing. So if you're researching the economy, take a look at the November and December 2008 Radio Liberty letters. But let's get back to your thoughts on really what's going on now. How can Hugo Chavez in Venezuela continue giving money away when, of course, the price of oil is down? This must have really cut into the income of the government there in Venezuela.
Well, it has. In fact, the Russians that supplied him with about $5 billion of arms are starting to put a lot of pressure on him. They're putting pressure on him for him to pay at least $1 billion back, which he doesn't have, because he's given so much money to left-wing governments in Bolivia, Ecuador, Nicaragua, El Salvador. He's funded a major Hezbollah training base on the Colombian border. Al-Qaeda still trains there. Hezbollah, Hamas have offices in Venezuela. But he is determined, no matter what it costs him, to try to damage the United States. So the Russians, of course, are using this leverage to build either a naval base there. The Chinese, very disturbing, just built a huge listening station coupled with a satellite launch base, which could be also used to direct missiles to the United States. That's been very well documented. And he's a problem, but it's also the United States is a problem. Before Condoleezza Rice left office, she said, basically, we are going to disengage from Latin America because we have to move over to the Pacific, PACCOM, to challenge, basically, the Chinese. And I don't see that happening. I see China and the United States getting closer together. Even though the Chinese conduct massive espionage in the United States, they extort American businesses with their so-called strategic alliance programs. They're building big missiles bases all over their coast that could threaten the west coast of the United States where you are. I still see that the United States and China are going to need each other for trade. We certainly need them for loans. A few months ago, and I've got this from very reliable sources, friends of mine in the State Department and other peoples that are based there, China received Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. And they came in and they basically told the Chinese, look it, we are great oil producers. You need oil. We have Russian oil, Iranian oil that we ship you, and you're making some deals with the Venezuelans. We'll give you more. But what we'd like you to do is stop loaning so much money to the United States. Now, the Russians did it, and if you read a lot of the press, you can read in between the lines, the Russians did it blaming the United States housing market on this whole economic crisis, and maybe they're not far off. But trying to squeeze the United States on loans was a way to limit us in our superpower reach. The Chinese thought about it, and they said, look it, basically, are you crazy? If the United States goes down the tubes, the whole world goes down the tubes. So I see that as kind of a unifying factor between the relations between China and the United States. Even though we have differences on Taiwan, human rights, we have differences on almost everything, the Chinese are continuing to fund us. And it doesn't look like they're going to pull our loans. So that's, I think, a bright spot in relations in terms of foreign policy and international relations.
Well, certainly China may not pull the money out of here, but since their income is down dramatically because we're not, of course, sending them we're not buying as much from China, and so they're not getting the amount of money, and of course they were taking the money that we were sending them and investing it in our T-bonds. But if they're not getting the money, they're not going to be able to buy the new T-bonds. And we're talking about having to raise $2 trillion next year.
They have about a year and a half. They're flush with cash.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. John, said me, but do the, I think the Chinese have something like about $600 billion invested here in T-bonds and certainly in American government agency bonds, things of that sort. Do they have an, are they going, do you think they're going to continue investing more and more in this, in our economy?
I think if you have a calendar, this is probably what's going to happen, although nobody has a crystal ball. They are flush with lots of cash for probably 18 months. Here's the problem. They estimate that this year they may fire 15 to 30 million people. 75,000 of their factories have closed down, okay? And they're starting to restrict their building projects. They were on a massive building project in the Caribbean. They basically have gone in everywhere from Venezuela, the Panama Canal, to the Caribbean. If you look at a map, it's Trinidad, Barbados, Guyana, Grenada, Antigua, Dominica, Jamaica, heavily in Jamaica, and the Bahamas. They're building schools, rebuilding ports. They're setting up food stores. They're giving free trips to the Caribbean. They're cutting all that back. They have no money. They're restricting that. They're cutting back like everybody else is. I think where we're going to get in a jam with the Chinese, if the Chinese economy continues to falter, and it could falter and accelerate overnight because they're just not making things like they used to that we were buying. We're cutting back. You know, it's very simple. We're cutting back on imports. And they're cutting back on exports. So that means simply less cash flow. So if they don't have less cash flow, you're absolutely right. They're not going to be loaning us any more money, and they could start to demand the payback. But it depends. And I think everybody is just waiting to see what's going to happen over the next 6 to 18 months. And I see a long, long recession for Europe, the Mideast. Latin America is just starting to go into recession. I have, being from Chicago, I have a lot of friends and family that are involved in commodities trading in the Midwest Stock Exchange, and they're all telling me that the Latin Americans are not buying as much corn, wheat, flour, that they used to buy, and they're starting to get things like soybeans.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Places in the area.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, John is pleased to have with. Our guest is John Quirk. And John is simply talking about his friends he has in the commodity exchanges there in the Chicago area are saying that Latin America has cut back dramatically on their purchases of corn and various grains. Is that right, John?
Yes, they're cutting back on all the food commodities. They're not importing. They don't have the money. They're worried about their own economies now, which means that's a big indicator that they're going to sink into recession. And it hasn't hit yet, but it's starting to hit. And it's not going to be good. I think everyone is waiting for things in the United States to turn around, including people in the United States. They're looking for some kind of sign that housing's going to turn around, that the stock market's going to do better, that these banks that have really caused a lot of the problems are going to turn around. But I don't see that. I see from just what I read that there's 1,000 banks in trouble, that the stimulus package, a lot of it, if you look at the items, the line items, there's a lot of silliness in there. There's no mandate or oversight to force the banks, cajole, or even beg them to loan money to small business and the housing industry, which fuels this whole country. There's none of that. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, Gettner, I thought, did a terrible presentation a few days ago. It's obvious that they're going to go back. Everybody's saying that they're going to need another $400 to $800 billion more for the economy, and that's just for the banks and the economy. That's not bailing out the auto industry. So we could be looking at probably another $1 trillion. And if that doesn't stimulate and jumpstart the economy, I don't think anything will.
Well, I tend to agree with you. And of course, I don't think that they're doing anything that is logical. I mean, basically, they got the original $700 billion, supposedly, because they were going to stop the cascading fall of the housing market. They refused to do that. They gave this money to the banks so they'd lend it out, but they forgot to stipulate and tell them they had to lend it out. I do not believe Henry Paulson is stupid. I think that what he said, he was going to try to stop the cascade of the fall of the housing market, he was lying. And he turned around and gave the money to his friends on Wall Street so they'd lend it out, but he forgot to stipulate they had to lend it out. There's no way a man who was able to accumulate almost $1 billion as CEO of Goldman Sachs could be that stupid. So now they're saying, well, now we're going to give him more money so they'll start lending it out. Well, why didn't you stipulate it before? And I think that what they want to do is give us the impression they're trying to solve the problem. But I really, John, I hate to say this, it sounds like I believe in a conspiracy, but I do. I think that they are specifically not trying to solve the problem. It's going to go on indefinitely, and we're going to drag the whole world down with us. It'll be very interesting to see as it unfolds.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but if you look at the backgrounds of the people in the Obama administration, if you just look at it from, try to be objective and not so much a conspiracy, but every president except Ronald Reagan, who was my hero, from Ford on, has been Yale, Harvard, Harvard, Yale, Yale, Harvard, and so on. They're all controlled or influenced by the Council of Foreign Relations, which are basically Ivy League elitists that think they know more than us mere mortals, and that their goal is one world financial system, revise the United Nations, which certainly needs reform, the International Monetary Fund, which the United States really controls, the World Bank, which the United States controls, but to unify it better. The other thing is, and this is an area that I work in 90% of the time, is that the United States for a long time wants to control all of the secret banking havens. Let me just list them. Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Monaco, Guernsey, the Isle of Man, Cyprus, Jersey, the Cook Islands, Espiritu Santo, Bermuda, Antigua, Bahamas, and the Cayman Islands. This is where all, in Malta, this is where all the secret money is. Now, none of those banks are in trouble. And the reason that none of those banks, and there's some of them, like in the Isle of Man, there's 200 or 300 banks. You know, they're just little offices, but they call themselves banks. All those banks are flush with hundreds of trillions of dollars, basically from three elements. The Russian mafia, the drug cartels, and American corporations that set up overseas asset protection trusts. Now, you've got 5 or 6 major frauds underway, equal to Madoff. Madoff, when it's all over, they said he stole $50 billion. He really stole about $100 billion, and there's more Madoffs coming down the pipe. There's bigger frauds coming. All of that money goes into the secret banking havens. The United States, under treaty, under the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty and other treaties, wants to get their hands on that money and control it. All of those banking havens have been, except for Switzerland, uncooperative with the United States. So if the global financial crisis gets worse, the only money that's going to be left are in all of those banking havens. They're all flush with money. Not one of them is hurt. Not Gibraltar, not Liechtenstein, not Bermuda. They all have trillions of dollars. So the United States and the Monetary Fund, and probably will be joined by Brazil and India, the big developing countries, or France, even Russia and China, will start to put pressure to regulate that so we can get our hands on that money. That's one of the ultimate goals of the one world people, the people that really want to control the international financial fight. And Gettner is part of that whole thing, Secretary of Treasury.
Well, do you think is Switzerland cooperating, or is it simply UBS, which of course United, a union bank of Switzerland?
Switzerland was forced to cooperate when it became known that they stole billions from Holocaust victims.
I see.
And Senator D'Amato and Edgar Bronfman forced them to reveal that, and the Swiss have hated us ever since then because we caught them lying, and they stole so much money from the poor Holocaust victims, you know, that put their money back in the 30s and 40s, and they just didn't pay any of the survivors or their families. But we have a treaty with Switzerland, and they do cooperate with us on criminal matters. Liechtenstein and Luxembourg do not, and that's where there's a lot of new money going into, because neither Liechtenstein or Luxembourg have signed the European money laundering laws, and they've refused to sign the MLAT treaty with the United States. And that's where a lot of the fraudsters' money goes, and that's where a lot of corporate money goes, and that's where probably you'd find money from Lehman Brothers and Goldman Sachs and everything else. 8 out of 10 major American corporations have asset protection trusts. You know, it's to avoid litigation, it's to avoid oppressive U.S. tax laws, it's a lot of it's legal, it's to avoid business partners suing and getting a judgment in America on an American bank and so on. It's more than just UBS, there's all kinds of banks there. Actually, there is one big Swiss bank in trouble because of the economic downturn, it's Credit Suisse. But most of the other banks are flush with money, and they have, a lot of them, they have names people have never even heard of. So the other thing is, I think, besides the economic downturn from housing, from the bailout, from the banks, the auto industry, tremendous corruption is on the increase. Fraud, like Madoff, who stole $50 billion. Ponzi schemes all over, pyramid schemes. Nigerian Ghanaian letter schemes, 419 dot schemes against American athletes. More and more money is being drained out of the United States as a result of fraud, and it winds up in those banking havens. And the United States is frustrated. They want to stop that.
But do you think the United States is going to be able to dictate terms? You know, we may be the strongest military country in the world, but of course it takes money to maintain a military, and America financially is really bankrupt. We're totally dependent upon other countries and their generosity so that we can continue going. How long can America maintain its dominance when it's the largest debtor nation in the world?
Well, that's right, and you know, we've expanded. We have, believe it or not, I think there's 200 countries in the world. There's about 70 democracies, 45 of which are a direct result of how great the United States has been in spreading both democracy and capitalism. We have bases in over 80 countries, and those cost a lot of money. Another, jumping over back to Afghanistan, one of the problems with Afghanistan is we could dominate Iraq and even Iran and parts of Europe and even the Pacific because we have a great navy. But Afghanistan is landlocked and in the middle of Central Asia or south of, next to Central Asia, which limits the United States' naval air power to do anything. So what the goal of the Pentagon is to rebuild special forces. They're training all kinds of brigades now at Fort Bragg and increasing our special forces brigades and rangers, and they're all geared to go to Afghanistan, and it's going to be a war of attrition. It's going to be, we're going to have tremendous casualties there, probably as many or equal to Iraq, and I think that's going to try, along with the huge deficits and the money that the Pentagon is going to demand for Afghanistan, plus all the weapon systems, that's going to be, it could be the real death knell of the American economy. Right now, we're in a recession. Things are not good. Obama and his people think that they can turn it around, and maybe they're trying to deceive us, and they're really going to raise taxes in 2010 and 2011 to pay off a lot of this debt. But a major war in Afghanistan could really sink us economically.
I share your concern, and I think that the outlook is far worse than most people suspect. And, Chris, I really think that the major problem is not Afghanistan. I think the major threat is from within, from the destruction of our monetary system. And this is the thing that I keep going back to, but I think this is the major problem facing America today. And all these others are really peripheral issues. So I do not see how we can maintain a massive military unless we can pay for it, and we can't pay for it without borrowing money. And, of course, the oil-producing nations are not having the tremendous profits they've had in the past. They're not going to be able to continue investing. Certainly Japan has always been one of the major purchasers of American bonds, and Japan, of course, is having real problems. Their exports are down dramatically. They're moving back into a real depression there, and, of course, as you've commented, China down the line is not going to have new money to invest for this. Even if they leave their old money they have, why is it a matter of generating new money to invest to buy up our debt? And I don't think anybody in the world has that amount of money. So the alternative is simply to turn on the printing presses and create the money. But that down the line will have a devastating effect on everyone in the entire country. So,
and the danger here, if you look back in the Depression, Germany was in trouble after World War I and the Versailles Treaty, and they went extreme right to fascism and Nazism. Japanese were in trouble before World War II, and they expanded and went into Japanese militarism. And who knows what the economic system is going to do to the political systems of China, Japan. And one of the dangers, you can see it in Obama's plans, is that in order to downsize the military and stop spending, I think Obama is going to be a president that looks tough on Afghanistan and expands, which I think is wrong, and then he's going to appease people. He's already going to appease the Iranians. The Iranians, he wants to drop the sanctions against Iran. He wants to unfreeze their money. He wants to give them oil technology with some kind of guarantee that they're not going to develop nuclear weapons. We haven't talked about Iran. Now, if Netanyahu gets in, he will definitely be at odds with the Obama administration because he wants to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. The other thing is, if we let Iran get away with this, we will lose face in that whole region, with the Saudis, the Arabs, with all the Islamic governments there that could start going fundamentalist. So there's threats happening now in Egypt and Yemen and other countries. So you could get into a period just like right after the Depression. The British appeased Hitler, and you had World War II shortly after. We didn't squeeze the Japanese enough, and then when we started squeezing them on scrap oil and scrap iron and oil, that led to war with Japan. I mean, it's more complicated. But so we have the economy, the economic systems all over the world being threatened, and that could affect the political systems.
Well, what's your view on Iran? What should we do as far as Iran is concerned? Should we try to take a tough line with them? Do you think that we should attack them? Do you think we should try to work out some sort of a compromise with them where they would tolerate Israel and we could get along with them? What are your thoughts on Iran? Because that's the big issue.
You know, I've worked with the Iranian opposition a long time. I've had contacts with a number of Iranians as I teach in, you know, at the French Diplomatic Academy in Paris. And I can tell you, I don't trust the Iranians because of one reason. They're not Arabs. They have a very proud culture, and they keep saying we don't respect them, and some of that is true. But the problem is that dedicated, fundamentalist, Shia version of Islam says two things. They say that the United States wants to destroy them, and the other side of it, the Iranians want to be the dominant power in the region. They want to have a Shia arc that goes from Iraq to Iran to Central Asia to Syria, Lebanon, and eventually push Israel into the sea. And the Israelis are never going to put up with that. So I'd be willing to see what Obama's going to do. This is the danger. we can unfreeze their assets. We can drop the economic sanctions. Europe will, and the United States will go along with that. We can give the Iranians the oil technology that they need from the United States. They can only get that from America. The trouble is, how can we verify that they're not going to develop nuclear weapons or they don't have them already? I think Obama will come back and say, look, we've reached peace in our times. This is a great thing. And we're going to have inspectors on the ground at all 1,500 sites where they're developing weapons-grade uranium. I think the Iranians are too smart. I don't think we're any match for them when it comes to these negotiations. So basically, I don't trust them unless they completely give up all their nuclear research. And they're not going to do that. They're going to say, we at least want to keep it for peaceful uses. And unfortunately, I think the Obama administration, because of all the trouble in the region, the fact that there hasn't been peace...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, John, go right ahead. You were just saying that...
Well, I see Obama as an appeaser when it comes to Iran, and I think there's going to be conflict between his administration.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
moves in Iraq, I don't think so, but who knows what's going to happen. In any case, I think it'll be 6 months to a year before there's any type of agreement between Iran and the United States. Again, the trouble is timing, because the Center for Strategic Studies at Georgetown, the CIA, says by the end of the year, Iran will have enough weapons-grade uranium for 2 to 3 bombs. The Israelis say, no, it'll be sooner than that. So We're going to have a big crisis this year with Iran in terms of national security. We'll probably have some mini crises with Russia. And then, of course, who can control these North Koreans? I mean, President Bush negotiated with them for 8 years, and just last week the North Koreans started threatening the South Koreans.
We live in a crazy world. John, we're out of time. I'm really looking forward. I want to get you on again sometime real soon. You know, we're living in, I think, the most dangerous times, certainly of my life, and I think for many, many reasons the outlook is not good, but we're just going to have to watch and wait and observe. God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us.
And I'll read your newsletters as you suggested.
All right, fine. Bye-bye. Good night. God bless.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, well, that was John Quirk, who spent many, many years working in intelligence. We've checked him out. We know people back in Washington, D.C., who've known him, and he certainly is involved with all sorts of things and analyses there in the Middle East, and he's on those people all throughout the world in key positions. Fascinating insight that you're not going to get elsewhere from, of course, from John Quirk. Well, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and you're positioned to help, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you have not yet read my November and December 2008 newsletters, let me recommend them. Even though I wrote them, I think they're really rather revealing, and I'm looking forward to getting our January 2009 letter out. It's done, and it really has a lot of very important information in it. Well, of course, certainly if you want to understand not only what's going on politically and monetarily, you understand what's going on spiritually, why you really need to get the great new DVD we're offering. It's called The Eye of the Phoenix. And it goes into the occult emblems on the back of the dollar bill and the president who put them there, the same president who packed the Supreme Court with Masons who would take God and prayer out of our schools. And, of course, that's what happened. That's why they took God and prayer out of our schools, because of the occult influence. And, of course, the occult president was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was deeply involved and fascinated with the satanic writings and material that had been accumulated by Manly P. Hall. And as you watch the DVD, you'll learn that the FDR actually sent a team out to Southern California to the Philosophical Research Society to photograph all of Hall's records. Why? Because, of course, Manly P. Hall had traveled the world trying to understand the world satanic movement and to tap into this supernatural power that is out there. And, of course, FDR, the President of the United States, was deeply involved. But certainly many of our other presidents have been involved. Richard Nixon was involved in the occult. And, of course, we know that we've had two recent presidents who belong to Skull and Bones, which is an occult Luciferian society, where the people kneeled in initiation. Kneel before a replica of Lucifer. If you'd like to see that, you can go to the website WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com, and you'll actually see the films. Somebody risked their life to get them. If you have never seen the films on the Bohemian Grove, we have that. And, of course, we have information on the Bilderbergers, DVDs. We have information on all sorts of things you're not going to get elsewhere. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you through the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And for the next views, well, why we're going to have next hour, we're going to have with us Dr. Don Shantz, and of course we'll be talking about our Constitution. Don had spent a great deal of time studying with Cleon Skousen. I don't know, remember how many of you are old enough to remember Cleon Skousen, but I certainly remember him. He was a dedicated American who went around, 30 or 40 years ago, trying to educate people about our Constitution, put on classes all across the nation, and he taught a lot of people about the Constitution. Well, Cleon Skousen, of course, he's actually the uncle of Joel Skousen, we have as a regular guest. Under any circumstances, Cleon, I don't know if he's passed away yet, but last time I talked to him, he just felt he was incapable of coming on the onto our radio program with us. But certainly Don has actually studied with Cleon from, 7 years, Don?
That's correct.
Well, you pick up the story there. And what motivated you to want to spend that length of time studying the Constitution and getting a Ph.D.?
Well, thank you for asking, Dr. Monteith. I have a great love of this country and a great love of America and the principles that founded it and what made it great. And I wanted to know more, and I went looking for someone in this United States that could teach me the principles that made this country great and that could give me some insight because of that great love that I had. And I concluded that Dr. Skousen was probably the best person, the greatest scholar that I could perceive at the time in terms of constitutional studies. And I asked him if he would be my mentor and direct my studies, which he did. And I'm very grateful for that, and it was a wonderful experience that I enjoyed immensely. I also had another person that I helped after I finished my Ph.D., and that was that I worked with Dr. Ron Paul as one of his original seven advisors on his Liberty Committee, and that was an experience that I enjoyed immensely as well. I didn't contribute as much as I would have liked to, but on the other hand, it was a great experience working with Dr. Paul.
All right, fine. Of course, I think one of the big problems today is the fact that we have a lot of lawbreakers back in Washington, D.C. We have men who have, some of them are frankly subversive, who hate America and want to merge us into a world government, but we have an awful lot of legislators who really don't understand the Constitution, though they've sworn to uphold it, and do not understand that most of what takes place in the legislative halls in Washington, D.C. is a violation of the Constitution, because the Constitution limits the power and authority of our legislators. And most of the legislation that is passed today, legislation like the recent stimulus bill, which will only stimulate inflation and profits for the big banks, is certainly not going to stimulate our economy. But all of this is totally and completely unconstitutional. So you pick up the story there, Don.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dr. Monteith. I think that you've done an excellent job over the years in educating people with regards to a number of these principles. And I am absolutely convinced that what made America great was the living of those principles on which this country was founded. And for just a second here, I thought that it would be important to review some of those principles. And you mentioned one of the key ones out there, and that is that our government was limited. The powers of our federal government was limited to 26 powers that were delegated to it by the states and by the people, which gave them only the power to work within those parameters. Now our government, as you just pointed out, has far exceeded those, and you know, the limiting factor anymore is basically thrown out. But nonetheless,
hold that thought. All right, Don, go right ahead.
That basically was one of the key elements of our Constitution was the fact that our federal government was limited and had only specific powers delegated to it. You know, the second thing that made and gave rise to our great country was that each individual had responsibility for his own welfare and accountability to God. And that was kind of an underlying premise that limiting government, the first principle, really included, is that if you limit government, then who takes the responsibility? That's the individual, he himself, and for his own welfare and for his family. And virtually that makes people want to get out there and work and do the things that they should. And so the second thing that people need to understand is that individual responsibility for their own welfare was a great motivator for people to go out there and serve and to make themselves great and to find their happiness. And the third thing that I think made our country really terrific was the fact that we had private property. When the people come from England, they were basically attached to the land, and bottom line, they didn't have any property, and so they couldn't really improve it, and they couldn't do anything, and what work they did do is that quite frequently what would happen is that the lords on which land they lived would confiscate all of their work efforts, and virtually they could never get out of serfdom. And private property was a great, gave people a great ability to move out of poverty and to be motivated to create their own wealth. The fourth thing was a market economy. A market economy gave us the ability to be able to have our economy grow, and it's in the hands of the people, and it's in the hands of those who can actually make the country grow. One of the key things that right now we're looking at in our country is that the government controls the economy and manipulates it, and the more they mess with it, as you have pointed out, some of your guests here in the past, the worse it gets. And ultimately what we end up with is that we're going to have a disaster that is going to happen because of manipulation that's going on right now with our new stimulus package, as you pointed out here earlier in the program. And then the fifth thing that I think that is important for our country was the separation of powers. And every grammar school kid learns that we had a legislative, executive, and judicial branch of our government, and those branches were separated so that you wouldn't have a tyrant. And if you a person was in power and he acquired any two of those, or maybe three if he was the king, the bottom line, he became a tyrant within a short period of time. And so by the separation of those powers, and that includes federalism, that...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And so basically Don is saying that the American Constitution was based upon the precept of limiting the power of the federal government. Matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be left to the states, but the power of the federal government over the lives of the people was to be limited. And then, of course, he talked about the separation of powers, legislative, judicial, executive. But then he mentioned the other thing. This is the concept of federalism. And basically, there was another check on the power of government, and that was the states. And basically, the states had power that the federal government could not intervene. In fact, the whole initial idea of the foundation of America was the United States Senate was to represent the states, not the individuals. Because once, of course, you have the people electing the senators, then, of course, you can have special interests putting in tremendous amounts of money to purchase them. And we would have the finest senators that money could buy, as we have today. But originally, why the senator was answerable not to the people who gave him the most money, as it is today, they were answerable to the state legislature, and they represented the interests of the state, and by so doing, they limited the power of the federal government so they could never usurp state authority. So pick up the story, Don.
Very good. I couldn't have said it better, Dr. Monteith. I think the key on it is that, you know, a number of amendments out there, and you specifically referred to the 17th Amendment there, is that where we now elect the senators by a popular vote. I mean, that has virtually eliminated that federalism that we have out there, that we used to have, and there is no representative to represent each of our states, and so they're basically nothing different than the congressmen out there, and you have
a lack of representation, and so virtually the power of the states have been neutralized, or they've been neutered, however you want to say it, and they end up with no ability to check the federal government and its expansion that has become almost unbelievably large at this point. And I'd say that there's a couple other points that I would make out there. That we had the common law that we dealt with when our country first began. We had expatriation, and we had individuals as sovereign under a sovereign God. But the most important principle that I'd emphasize at this point is that we had a people and a country that had the most significant building block of any society in the world to that point, and probably since that time. And that is that the people that were here were citizens that followed a Judeo-Christian God. We had a God that was a virtually paramount in 80% of the people's lives here in the United States at the formation of our country. And it was significant that they were so. And these were not Hindus or Buddhists or any other group. These were Christians that strongly believed in God of the Old and New Testament. And I think that is the major building block that helped the people become self-reliant. It gave them the ability to be able to understand limited government, and it gave them the power and the blessings from God to be able to go forth. And that is, I think, a very significant thing, and that's what we have gotten away from in this country, and that's a lot of what your program is about. As I've listened to you over the years, is that virtually we have, as a people, we have left that God, we have left that fellowship with the Spirit, and we no longer have the ability to be able to recognize good and evil as a people in general. Individually, we of course have many that are doing, and that's what you're trying to do, is awaken the people to, get back to their roots that made us great. And that is what made America great. That is what gave us the ability to move forward. But as we have slipped further and further away from that, we have slipped further and further into the road of socialism, and we have slipped further and further down that trail that's going to lead us to what I'm perceiving at this point, a disaster, a train wreck at the end of this within the next couple of years, and we are going to be a people that are going to be virtually very, very sad because of the consequences of our actions. So that is that's the train wreck that I see coming, and I know that my associate Roger, that you had on here the other night, Young, virtually went through that in some detail. And so I would just say at this point that this train wreck that's coming is certainly on the horizon out there. But, we have some good news out there as well. And that's my message that I want to leave here today, and I'd like to discuss here at this point, is that How can we avert the tragedy that's coming to our country? How can we avert the calamities that are coming to this nation and to this people? How can we get out from under this condemnation that we are under and be able to survive the coming destructions that are foretold prophetically, as well as, most every scholar that I've seen out there in the last several months, they're all jumping on the bandwagon now foretelling what's going to be happening out there. So I have a solution here that I think that we need to look at this point, so that we can recognize that there is a way out. There is something that we can do to get ourselves back in line again. And that is fairly simple. And if there's nothing that is short of miraculous that will take us out of this, but at the same time, that it is something that will give us the ability to go back to that free, happy, prosperous, delightsome people that we have been over the last, years. And that is that here's the solution. I propose that we do exactly the same thing that we did the first time to make us a blessed and prosperous country. And what was that we did the first time? Well, I think we have to go back and look at the history of our country to find out what really went on. And that is going to involve a little discussion here, but virtually what we're looking at is that we had some great men in our country. Our founding fathers that we all like to refer to, you know, the George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Samuel Adams, and so on. They were truly great men, and they were our founding fathers, and they were men of unbelievable integrity, and they were men of great education, and they were spiritual men, and 52 of the 55 of them that were signers on the Declaration of Independence were, you know, very strong Christian men, and the other three were, you know, not members of any Orthodox church, but nonetheless they were believers in the Bible and Jesus Christ and his, you know, work here upon the earth for each of us. But the key, I think, that we need to understand with these individuals is that they just didn't pop up out of nowhere. They just didn't all of a sudden, you know, decide that, you know, here I am, I'm going to become, you know, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. I think certainly God had some hand in that and guiding them down here because they were great men and they were truly inspired men. But I think at the same time, we have to recognize not only them as our founding fathers, but we have to recognize our, what I call our founding grandfathers. And our founding grandfathers were probably as important in the establishment of this country as our founding fathers, which, and they seldom get any recognition, seldom get any press, they seldom get any accolades. And it's not something that I think that is, that should be left out. I think that all the times that I spent on studying the Constitution, what I have ultimately ended up being, which I find quite interesting, is that you cannot divorce the study of the Constitution in this country and its greatness without becoming a scholar of the Bible and a scholar of religion. They just merge right into one another. So I started off trying to become a constitutional scholar, and I'm ending up, as I find here 20 years later, becoming a scholar of religion. And so they merge right together, and you can't talk about one without the other. And our founding grandfathers are significant in the establishment of this country. And if we want to get back to where we have the blessings of our Heavenly Father with us and we can become a great nation and people again, then we have to understand those founding grandfathers. And let me just for a second go back there and talk about them and give you a perspective on how we started off so we can see how we got there. And we will be able to then follow that same track again to become the great people that were here. And it began, and you can start off almost anywhere, but I'll start off with Martin Luther. He was a great, great leader of the people, and he started a Reformation back, you know, the 1500s, and virtually that, you know, continues on to this day. He was a great, great, great person that helped us get things started. And shortly after that, we had an interesting story with Henry VIII. Henry VIII decided that he wanted to divorce his wife. And in that divorce, that he couldn't get the Pope to sign on to that, so he decided to form his own church and make himself the Pope. Well, as he did such, that he formed the Church of England, of course, and all of his subjects went and joined the Church of England and were members of his church there. And then another one of our great founding grandfathers was a fellow by the name of William Tyndale. And Tyndale was, you know, one of my favorite people. He spent his life translating the Bible. He translated it from Latin and from Greek and from Hebrew and translated it into English. And so right when Henry VIII formed his church, then he made that Bible available to all of the people out there. And people started reading it, and they started studying it. And Tyndale was, you know, was responsible for that. And he gave them that great ability to do it. Well, his reward was that Henry VIII burned him at the stake. And poor William, I'm sure he was not happy about that, but nonetheless, he has his reward in heaven, and he'll be on the right hand of God someday as one of the great martyrs of this generation. And so he was one of those great founding grandfathers and gave the people of the Church of England the Bible. And they
hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. And of course, we're indebted to Tyndale for translating the scriptures into English. All right, our guest is Don Shantz, and we're talking about, of course, the background of America.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
To the new land. But it was this really desire for religious freedom that motivated people to leave the, you know, the comfort and security of the continent, to come to, you know, this unknown hemisphere, where it'd be Indians, where there'd be danger, where they, so they would not have security. But they were willing to give up the security and the comfort of England and Holland to come to America so they could worship as they saw fit. So pick the story up from there.
Very good. What happened is that, you know, we're all familiar with the Mayflower Compact when they got here, and the Mayflower and you know, the settlement and all the things that went on. But the most interesting thing to me about this from a constitutional perspective is that what both these groups of people saw when they read the Bible that Tyndale had translated for them, is that they saw in the Bible, in the Pentateuch, in the first five chapters of the Old Testament there, of what God was really trying to do for his people. They had read and understood the Bible better than anybody else at that time, and they were willing to live it. They wanted to become God's people, to set up a Zion society. They wanted to receive the blessings of God, and they wanted to understand what that blessings could be for them, and they knew exactly what they had to do and where they got that. And so I think it's important that, you know, we just take a minute here and read, you know, some of the stuff that they read, and so that you can understand what they were thinking and be able to appreciate the sacrifice that they made here. And you can find this in several. You can find it in Leviticus chapter 26, but I'm going to go to probably my favorite one of those, and that's in Deuteronomy chapter 28. I'm just going to read a couple verses and show you what they saw and what they were believing and what they wanted to do. And it says here in verse 1, "And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Blessed shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field. Blessed shalt thou be in the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of the ground. Blessed shalt thou be in the basket, in thy basket and thy store. Blessed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and blessed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way, and flee before thee seven ways. The Lord shall command the blessing upon thee and thy storehouses, and in all that thou settest before thy hand. The Lord shall establish thee in the holy and holy people unto himself, and as he hath sworn unto thee, if thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God and walk in his ways." And he goes on here for about another 10 verses, citing all the blessings that these people are going to do, they will receive if they will make him their God. And so these people, the Pilgrims and the Puritans, as they came over here, and what they did is that they made a covenant with God. They made a covenant, and that is written in a number of places out there. That covenant was that they would be his people, and he would be their God. And they asked for his blessings to be upon them as they did, as they kept their covenant. And a covenant is nothing more than a promise by one side to do one thing, and in this case it's the Pilgrims and Puritans, to obey God's laws, which, you know, basically, thou shalt not kill, murder, keep the Sabbath day holy, and that sort of thing. And then on the other side, God told them he'd bless them. He'd protect them from their enemies. He'd bless their crops. He would send the rain when it was supposed to come, and so on. And that was the covenant that these people made. And that's the covenant that started off this country. And they were blessed, and they were prospered, and their enemies were protected. And the Pilgrims have story after story after story of miraculous interventions of God on their behalf, from, you know, protecting them from the Indians to averting starvation, you know, one thing after another that they have, and as you study their stories. And it's important that I think we realize that that is the foundation that our grandfathers, our great grandfathers, if you will, that led to the establishment of our country through our founding fathers. And so firstly, what we're ending up here with is a people that were a covenant people that had the blessings of God with them because of their righteousness. And that's the message that I have for us here today. That bottom line is that we as a people, if we want the same blessings to come back to this land, to us as individuals, to us as communities, then we have to do the same thing that they did. And that is to covenant again with our God in heaven.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Don is talking about the religious background of the men who came to America and founded this nation But of course, unfortunately, Don, most of our people have turned away from God. This is the tragedy. In the churches, they no longer teach about the Christian history of America. They simply ignore that. It's no longer taught in our schools. And unfortunately, even today, the message and the music in our churches is changing. Christianity is under attack, because if you can destroy Christianity, you can destroy the very essence of what America was all about. And I'd say the other side is doing a pretty good job. And there are not very many people out here are reaching the public and making them understand the spiritual component of the battle in which we're engaged. So how are we going to reach the people? That's the question.
Very good. Well, I think that what we have to do, there's two things to do. We have to, first of all, as you're doing here, Dr. Monteith, is that we have to educate the people. They don't know what to do. Most people are not aware of what can they do to avert this tragedy that they see that's coming. I mean, it's like a huge storm. The black clouds are gathering in front of us. What can we do to be able to avert it? I think that we have to follow people like yourself, get the message out there so that they can be able to know what they can do as individuals. We have to be a covenant people again. And if we are not, you know, we will not survive that which is coming. Because in that same chapter in Deuteronomy, and it also is again expressed in several other places in that Pentateuch, it virtually says the same thing. And so this is not just once, it has chapters on this. And the Lord says out there, if you cease to be a covenant people, if you do not do what I tell you, then the bottom line, or if you don't keep my commandments, the bottom line is this, is that I'm going to bring your enemies upon you, and I'm not going to send the rain when you have, you're going to have droughts, you're going to have disasters, you're going to have cursings of this and cursings of that, and you know, you're going to just be destroyed as a people. And so our basic premise here that we're operating under is that you have two choices. Once you become a covenant people, which we were, is that we can either continue that covenant and be blessed as we were, and we prospered more in our society in just a few years than has ever happened in the history of the world in any country at any time. And, you know, there was people all over that recognized that, but let me just tell you one person that you're probably familiar with, and that's a historian. That was a great French historian by the name of Alex de Tocqueville. And Alex, He, in the early 1800s, he wanted to know what made America great so quick.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Don is talking about the Christian heritage of America. And America, initially, was really a Christian nation. Now, not that Christian had any one sect that dominated, and nobody ever wanted either to have the Catholics or the Protestants or the Methodists or the Congregationalists, because we all have different approaches. But all of the religions look to Christ, our Lord, as the source of our freedom. And of course, this is how it was. It existed for certainly 100, 150 years here in the United States. And Don was talking about a French philosopher, a French historian named Alexis de Tocqueville, who came to America in about 1839, and eventually he wrote something called Democracy in America, and it's really a traditional book. At one time, all of these things were taught in school. Today, none of them are taught in school because, of course, we can't talk about God in our schools, because Franklin Delano Roosevelt packed the Supreme Court with Masons who wanted to change America from a Christian nation with a Christian foundation to a secular nation. And, of course, they succeeded because they took God and prayer out of our schools. So these things are never taught today. But why don't you get back to what Alexis de Tocqueville had taught and what he wrote. Go ahead.
Very good. I appreciate that introduction on that, Dr. Stan. I think that the key on it is this, is Alice de Tocqueville, he wanted to understand what made America great. And he was very curious. I mean, it's basically been 40 years since, 40 couple years. And, I mean, we were already the greatest nation in the world. And how could that be? Because the French Revolution happened, but what happened in France? I mean, they went nowhere. I mean, the English were going nowhere. The Germans were going nowhere. The Italians were going nowhere. Nothing was happening in the Middle East or in China or anything. I mean, all of a sudden, we, like a rocket ship, shoot up as the most powerful, significant country in the world, and everybody's wanting to get here. I mean, that's when my heritage or my family, my great-grandfather come over during that same era. And it's interesting that he wanted to find out what made it great. And so he went around looking, and I'll read his statement right from his book, as you already have indicated that he has made some significant statements here. And this is what he said. He says, "I sought for the key to the greatness and genius of America in her harbors, in her fertile fields and boundless forests, in her rich mines and vast world commerce, in her public school system and institutions of learning. I sought for it in her Democratic Congress and in her matchless Constitution. But not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits aflame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great." And that's what Alex said. And a great historian that discovered the key to the success of America, and that was, again, in our churches, he found it. And it was the covenant people that he found at that period of time. And in 1776, 75% of the people in the United States were following that Puritan Christian Reformation perspective of life. They dominated society. They dominated political thought. People went to church and kept the Sabbath day holy. It was the unusual person that didn't go to church. It was the unusual person that wasn't trying to obey the laws of God. And one of the key things that, you know, some of the key things that they found in studying the scriptures, the Old Testament, and for just to give you an example here, is that they had, you know, one of their elections up there, and they had in these elections a number of people that were very eloquent, and they were trying to let people know that they should go out there and vote and how they should put things together in terms of their society. And ultimately what happened is that this one preacher started telling the people that, you know, the origins of our country, it's important to vote because the origins of our country, they come from the Greeks and the Romans out there. And there's a great preacher at the time that stood up right there, and he says that is absolutely not true, that our origins of our country and our foundation of our country are not and do not reflect the origins coming from Rome or from Greece. Those people were pagans. Our origins of our country, they come from God and the Scriptures. We are a covenant people. We do not believe in democracy. We are a people that virtually have the covenants with Heavenly Father, and that is why we follow the law of God. We do not follow this democracy or this thought that's coming out of the Roman Empire. Virtually, that is the foundation of our country. And our founding fathers understood that. They understood it better than anybody. They rejected the democracies, and they rejected the other forms of government out there as they put ours together, knowing that we basically were going to be a people of God. And as while we followed God, that the bottom line is that we were going to have that great ability to be able to be blessed by Him and be able to receive all the riches of the earth, and that people would come here from afar, and they would help this country prosper, and we'd give them opportunity, and it would become greater than anyone had imagined at the time, and in just a very short period of time. So that's the real origins that we're looking at, and that's what we needed to get back to. And I can give you just some thoughts of some of our founding fathers here for just a second, Dr. Stan, so that you can kind of have your listeners out there get a better perspective on what our founding fathers said of their grandfathers and what they have done for them. So I'll first read James Madison, who is known as the chief architect of our Constitution, and he is one of the key founding fathers. And he said that we have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of all of our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. And so that's, you know, that's, again, that individual responsibility that the Puritans and Pilgrims brought with them. They were very, very, you know, important as founding grandfathers to be able to make our country great. Patrick Henry, he said, it cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, as people of different religions, but by Christians, not on religion, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so, again, that was Patrick Henry, one of the great founders out there. John Adams, President Adams, said that, the highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. Again, we were a Christian nation. That's what we're founded upon, and that's what made us great. It's not, if you look around the world and see who has made it great, who can make it great, the only people that can be free, the only people that can have the greatness that is attributed and have the blessings of God are Christians. And so, again, a covenant people are so important to Heavenly Father. He has to have them to do His work on the earth. And those Pilgrims and Puritans, their whole Zion Society that they were trying to set up was basically that they wanted to, from here, spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world and bring that good news so that when His second coming came, that they could be able to, again, help in that process. And so Patrick Henry said in 1776, it cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. For that reason alone, people of other faiths have been afforded freedom of worship here. And that's one thing that we, emphasize in our country over and over. But on the other hand, I mean, if you go over to any of the Muslim countries out there, you don't have a freedom of religion. I mean, the bottom line is that if you're not a Muslim, then the history of that religion is virtually that you'll end up either dead or a Muslim. And that is their history. On the other hand, we're not Hindus or we're not Buddhists, and that's not the foundation of our country. We're Christians, and that's the heritage that we have, and it's a great and wonderful heritage if we'll do it. And,
well, I think, Don, what the important thing is for people to understand is that we can how you define the term a Christian nation. Now, some people say that, well, you know, Iraq is a Muslim nation today. Iraq is a Muslim nation. If you read their constitution, you'll find out that they stipulate that the country will be ruled by Sharia law. Here in the United States, there is nothing in our Constitution that says that America will be ruled by Christian law. It was simply a foregone conclusion that the only way that you could have people be free was if they were ruled by God, and that old adage that those will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And so, in a Christian country with a Christian background, why, men could be free because they would be able, as you said earlier, to govern themselves. And the ideas led forward our Constitution were basically to limit the power of government so people could govern themselves and take care of themselves under the guidance of the Ten Commandments. Certainly, freedom does not mean that you can do whatever you want to. Freedom means that you can do what you should do according to God's commandments. And people do not understand that our society was made for a moral and religious people and would not serve for any other. And of course you can say, well, I'm a Muslim and I'm a moral individual, fine. But if you're a Muslim, you have to believe that the government should follow Sharia law, which does not tolerate other religions, and the same is true with all the other religions. So when we talk about America being a Christian nation, we mean it was founded on Christian principles of individual freedom under God, but not the Catholic religion, not the Presbyterian religion, not the Assembly of God religion. It was based upon God's laws and the fact that men would be free, and then they would be able to worship exactly as they wanted to. That, of course, where we get into trouble is defining a Christian nation. I agree with everything you've said. It is simply that people say, well, there's nothing that got in the Constitution that says we're a Christian nation. Doesn't even say that in the Declaration of Independence, and that's true. But it was a foregone conclusion that the religion they were talking about when America was founded and the God that they were talking about was the person of Jesus Christ. So you go right ahead.
Very good. I couldn't have said it better. And so I appreciate that that comment there, Dr. Monteith, and I think that it's important. And again, I would emphasize that as I have tried to become a constitutional scholar over the years, that what I find myself becoming is a religious scholar. And it is so interesting to me that that transition would take place, and that we have the ability as a nation to come back from this disaster that's awaiting us. I think that God is not going to fight our battles this time because we have not been a righteous nation. We are not going to have the ability to be able to pull ourselves back from the brink of other countries coming in and taking us over and cleansing us. But at the same time, Dr. Skousen, my mentor that you mentioned here at the beginning of the program is, he had a saying that I love to hear when he said it. And he'd say that, I've read the last chapter of the book. And he would kind of smile and he says, and the last chapter says the good guys win. And that always made me feel good. And especially at this time, and I'd quote him on saying that Dr. Skousen, I appreciate that insight, is that the last chapter of the book says the good guys win. Christ comes and the righteous are going to be saved, but the wicked are going to be burned. And so what we have to do as a people is make sure that we're not amongst the wicked. We have to make sure that we are righteous, that we are the people that have covenanted with God. And I think those are the ones, of course, that are going to make it. But there's going to be, of course, some that will be martyrs and that will be, join the Tinsdales and they'll burn them at the stake or whatever they're going to do. But I think that the majority of people that are righteous will make it. And that covenant people is as important today as it was in the time of the Pilgrims. And they led and gave the strength to our founding fathers to be able to do what they did. And the people were ready for this Constitution. The people of the United States were not just some group of disconnected individuals. They were united in their belief in Jesus Christ, and that's why that unity had brought them together. That covenant people gave them the ability to get God's blessings. And so George Washington, the stories just surrounding him. I mean, they have, in the French and Indian War, they had people that the Indian chiefs told his people just shoot at George, and fire at him, and he'd be riding his horse, and he had bullets through his hat and through his coat and through his pants, and but they could not kill George Washington. And unbelievable blessings one after another that we received in this country, and these stories are very prevalent. They used to teach in our schools and in our classes, but they don't teach them anymore. We learn about Martin Luther King, and we learn about Marilyn Monroe, and we learn this fluff stuff, but in reality, we have not really put ourselves in a perspective to be able to understand what really made America great, what gives us the ability to be able to go forward. And with the disasters that are hanging in front of us, we need to understand that. We absolutely need to pay attention to the signs of the times and know that this country can survive. This people can survive. You as a person can survive. Your family can survive. But it's not going to be easy. And you're going to have to pay attention to those covenants that you make as a person. And I would admonish all your listeners out there now to pay attention, to make those covenants, to do what you need to do to become a people of God again, and make Him your God so that He will fight your battles. He'll protect you. He will prosper you. He'll get you through this. Because without that, I don't know if any of us can make it, because what I see ahead is not only prophetically, but also with regards to politically and economically out there, it's just going to be very difficult.
Well,
some of the things that are on our website out there, which incidentally, Dr. Monteith, is www.g-r-i, that's our website, .org, and virtually that we try to take the prophecies that we see out there, combine them with our knowledge of the latter-day events and forecast what is going to be happening out there in our country. It's kind of unusual in the sense that, we have a lot of forecasters that take the events of the country, and they are able to, forecast what's going on out there, but they don't put them together with the prophecies that have been given in Revelations and Daniel and Ezekiel and Isaiah and so on. in the scriptures, looking at the prophets, and are not able to get the exact events when they're going to occur. And I'd say that the record that my partner and myself, Roger Young, have is significantly higher than most because of the fact that we have that ability to be able to pull in the prophecies that, you know, Heavenly Father has foretold that these events are going to happen in the sixth and seventh seal.
Well, now, once again, what is your website? Let's get it out one more time.
All right, it's www.g-r-i.org, and that stands for Global Research Initiative.
All right, fine. Now we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. I guess it's been Dr. Dan Schentz. Well, Don, you have...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Perfectly, so that it would occur before the election, so that Barack Obama would win. Barack Obama, of course, has put at least 11 members of the 87 members of the American members of the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission in key positions. So he's obviously certainly another puppet, one more in the long line of puppets of the ruling elite who control our nation, whose dedication is not to the United States, but to this concept of a new world order and a new world religion. What you must really do is read my November and December newsletters, and hopefully our January newsletter will be out soon, and you can read that, and it will help you to put together all of the loose strands of the story that we're telling. Understand that we are dealing with organized evil that is intent upon destroying the economy of the world. The foundations of the Trilateral Commission are built in the occult, and many of the leaders of this organization are deeply involved in the occult, and nobody's going to tell you that. And so we have to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. The forces of evil are in total control back in Washington, D.C., and there is no way we can stand against that except, of course, with the help of our Lord. Oh, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret and get the syllabus that goes with that. Let me suggest the new DVD we just got in, The Eye of the Phoenix. We've gone through almost 100 of them here in the last couple of weeks. We sent them out across America. And if you haven't already seen The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning or Riddles in Stone, it will give you the foundation to understand what is going on in the world today. If you want to understand the foundation of our freedom, why we have the freedom documents put together by Pastor Chuck Baldwin, and all the basic documents that you need to have at your fingertips, dealing with the Christian background foundation of this country. We carry the excellent book by our good friend John Stormer. It's called Betrayed by the Bench. We recommend it. We have, of course, The America's God and Country by William Federer. We think it's an important book, although it's almost like an encyclopedia, but it's something you should have by your side to read and reference. And then, of course, if you want to understand what's going on financially, you need to hear my talk on the financial tsunami and get the syllabus goes with that. You need, of course, to get the pamphlets on the history of money and the financial meltdown. And then the classic book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the classic book entitled The Federal Reserve Conspiracy and Fiat Money Inflation in France. It was written, 100, 125 years ago about something that happened 225 years ago. It goes into the background of the French Revolution, but you have to understand what happened in the past to understand what's going on today. So again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't laid in your supply of long-term storage food, why, we work with Ready Reserve. If you'd like to get their catalog, why, of course, their prices are wholesale. You'll get them the same prices to us. You'll get them through Ready Reserve. You need to get yourself the Berkey water filter. You need to lay in a supply of health foods. And of course, if you're interested in gardening in a can, certainly one of our advertisers, we think they do a great job. So we hope many of you out there will begin making the preparations, that you will get out of debt, that you will do everything you can to secure yourself, your friends, and help us get the information out, get people to listen to our programs, understand that behind the collapse of our economic system are powerful spiritual forces that want to destroy this country, because once we were the Christian beacon of the world. So we ask you, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com.